Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, the Oral History Program 2. My name is Mildred J. Menlo, and with my partner, Ruth Weiner, we are interviewing Mr. Erwin Goldberg. Ruth, you had a question you want to ask?
Yes, we had talked a little bit at the last interview about Montefiore's breaking of the color line. And I wonder if you could expand upon that a little bit and the role of Father McElvain. His name was mentioned.
Well, insofar as the color line is concerned, Montefiore Hospital was the first hospital to have black students in its nursing school and to have employed black nurses. Similarly, it was the first hospital to have black interns and black residents and to have them to have black physicians on its staff. Obviously, over the years, the color line has been broken down in all the hospitals, but Montefiore was recognized as a very socially progressive institution. The reference to Father McElvain was related to during the troubled era of the late 60s and early 70s, there was a movement by the black community to have black members on the boards of hospitals. And Montefiore was approached at the time by Father McElvain, who was active in that movement in the Hill District, to see about having black board members. That was not a problem for our board, and the only matter was how such nominees would be selected. They wanted to select the people who would go on our board. And, of course, the board was unwilling to have people select members to its board. So we asked the black community to suggest some names to us, and we would find other suitable names of black members. And actually, as it turned out, we selected two members to our board, one of whom was from the nominees that had been suggested by them, and one of our own. And we've had black members on the board off and on for a period of probably 15 years. So that was the reference.
Can you give me an idea of time frame for the black nurses? And
I can't give you that. I think it was at least 40 or 50 years ago.
That long
ago? Oh, yes. It was very, very early. Yes, I knew that physician up there.
Where did we get the black interns? From where did we get the black interns and residents?
Well, I'm sure they were recruited from medical schools, or interns made applications, and the applicants, I'm sure, were for those medical schools where there was a predominance of black medical students. There were not a lot of black medical students at all in Pittsburgh. Just because it was difficult for them to get into the medical school. So I don't recall the names of the medical schools, but they would have been from probably Pittsburghers who had gone away to medical schools outside of Pittsburgh and then returned to practice.
Do you think their difficulty in getting into medical schools was basically discrimination, or do you think most of them were lacking academically?
I think it's both. I think the number of applicants to medical schools was limited by their limited educational backgrounds. But I also think that even those who were qualified had great difficulty getting into medical schools because of discrimination.
Somewhat like the Jewish.
As I mentioned before, University of Pittsburgh Medical School had a quota system all the way through the middle 50s. Actually, it wasn't until the medical school was reorganized by the Mellons in the late 40s and 50s that quota system was dropped. I think it was dropped in the 50s, which certainly isn't that long ago.
do you see now in the changing atmosphere of Montefiore for the future?
Well, first of all, what is happening at Montefiore, what has happened at Montefiore, is a direct reflection of what's happening across the entire country. Namely, the needs for Jewish hospitals has totally, almost totally, changed and diminished because of the integration of Jewish physicians into hospitals at large. As I mentioned before, at one time, they couldn't get on the staffs of other hospitals. Surgeons couldn't operate at other hospitals. Jewish patients had special needs that could only be met in a Jewish-sponsored hospital. Jews felt more comfortable both culturally and with food, and plus the fact that their physicians generally were Jewish physicians and they couldn't practice elsewhere. With the breaking down of I'll call the discrimination, and with the changing economic status of hospitals across the country, what has happened is the Jewish physicians are now being eagerly sought by hospitals, one, because they're always well qualified, but secondly, because the hospitals want their patients so that they can fill their beds and keep their budgets balanced. So today, Jewish physicians and surgeons are welcomed everywhere. And as a result, the hospital, the Jewish-sponsored hospitals, have lost many, many of their patients and physicians to the general hospitals and communities. This has created tremendous economic problems for the hospital, because when a hospital isn't adequately filled, it has serious financial problems. And it's very difficult for Jewish communities to support the financial needs of Jewish hospitals, because hospitals have grown so large and their budgets are so huge that there isn't any way for a Jewish community to actually support the operating needs of Jewish hospitals. So consequently, across the country, many Jewish hospitals have found themselves in serious financial difficulties. I should point out that almost universally, Jewish hospitals have been closely affiliated with medical schools and are teaching hospitals. Well, teaching hospitals have much higher costs than community hospitals because of the costs of medical education, the costs of medical research, the nature of the patients that they get, because teaching hospitals get more complex cases that are usually more expensive. And what that has resulted in is that the cost of care in teaching hospitals is so much greater, and in today's economy, corporate employers and insurers are looking to get the cost at the lowest possible price. So many patients that used to come to the teaching hospitals are now going into other hospitals. Health maintenance organizations, these prepaid plans, also have made arrangements with hospitals where they can get the care at a lesser cost. And interestingly enough, many of the physicians who are in teaching hospitals also have appointments at these lower cost hospitals, so they're in a position to see those patients in cheaper hospitals, and that increases the financial problems of Jewish hospitals. So what I'd like to point out is, in the last 10 years, and it's going on right now, many Jewish hospitals have either closed or merged or have been taken over. Just briefly, Mount Zion Hospital in San Francisco has become a part of the University of San Francisco, University of California, San Francisco, and it's given up its independence and its autonomy. Mount Sinai Hospital in Minneapolis was taken over by the University of Minnesota, and actually has just become a wing of the university's complex. Mount Sinai in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, merged with a Lutheran hospital. It had to give up its identity, although it's... But in any event, it merged for the same reason. It was a downtown hospital. It had significant problems. Sinai Hospital in Detroit has been involved in a number of discussions with Henry Ford Hospital about merging because it has had significant problems. There are a number of other hospitals. Sinai Hospital in Baltimore has been involved in a number of discussions with Johns Hopkins. Again, for the very reasons that I've spoken of before, that the need no longer exists, the financial problems have become very acute, the community can't support the hospitals. And I must say, both in Pittsburgh and elsewhere, the major concerns of the Jewish community, I think, have been with Jewish identity and Jewish education, and the funds have generally been directed there. I should point out that the Jewish hospital in Brooklyn was merged a number of years ago with, I think, a Lutheran hospital. That complex is now called the Interfaith Hospital. The only Jewish-sponsored hospitals that are likely to remain will be those hospitals in large Jewish communities where the hospital is financially successful because of its location and relationship to the medical schools, and also are in communities with large Jewish populations. So I see, for instance, before I say that, I should point out that Mount Sinai Hospital in Chicago is on the verge of either going bankrupt or being eliminated. But in any event, Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, which is in Beverly Hills, is a very large hospital and a recognized hospital. I'm sure it will continue. Probably Michael Reese Hospital in Chicago will continue, although it's involved in seeking a partner because it's having financial problems of which I spoke, because it's located in a bad section of town. Beth Israel Hospital in Boston is a very well-recognized hospital, part of the Harvard complex, and I'm sure it will continue. The large Jewish hospitals in New York City, Mount Sinai, Long Island Jewish, Montefiore, Beth Israel, are all likely to continue because, you know, there are 2 million Jews in New York, and they are all teaching hospitals. On the other hand, Maimonides Hospital in Brooklyn, which is has been for many years a kosher Orthodox hospital, is having significant problems.
They have a rehab institute as well.
I'm not familiar with all of the details, but I know the hospital. I know they've been having significant financial problems and have been having significant turnover. Mount Sinai Hospital in Miami, I'm sure it will continue because of the large influx of the elderly Jews in the Miami area, and they're in a good location, although that's changing. There are Jewish hospitals in New Orleans, Touro having problems, Kansas City, Menorah Hospital having problems, Jewish Hospital in Louisville having problems. The one in Cincinnati, Jewish Hospital in Cincinnati, is doing reasonably well. I skipped a few, but I guess what I'm really saying is that the assimilation of Jewish medicine into the Jewish community has created major problems for Jewish hospitals. So going back to Montefiore, Montefiore suffered from many of the same problems, namely that Jewish physicians and surgeons could finally practice in the hospitals in the community. So many, many of its patients went to those hospitals. Particularly, I didn't mention this, but particularly in Pittsburgh and elsewhere, as suburbanization occurred. and the population moved into the suburbs, and the physicians moved into the suburban hospital, well, then the patients didn't want to come in town and face the parking problems and the traffic problems and the security problems, et cetera, et cetera. And that's been a contributing factor across the country. The physicians have pretty much followed the population.
All right. I understand the suburban move. People want to be within their own particular area. How do you account for the fact that the majority of the doctors who are leaving Montefiore Hospital are not necessarily going only into the suburban hospitals, but are going into West Penn, St. Francis, and a large number into Shadyside? If Montefiore is still a teaching hospital, as these other hospitals are, why this general exodus?
Well, first of all, let me say that they're not leaving in the sense of giving up their medical staff appointments. They generally keep their medical staff appointments because there are some patients who want to be in Montefiore Hospital, either for dietary or other purposes. However, to get back to the question, I think there are two or three factors that are involved. First of all, the Center City hospitals like Montefiore, and I mean West Penn, Allegheny General, Shadyside, St. Francis, all have the same kinds of problems of trying to attract enough patients into their center city location. So all hospitals are having occupancy problems. So all hospitals are out looking for physicians who can admit patients. So many of those hospitals have actively solicited and recruited physicians, not just Jewish physicians, but Jewish physicians also. Secondly, this movement is not an overnight movement. I mean, this has been going on actually for the last 20 or so years because at one time physicians couldn't get on the staffs. Thirdly, and this is an interesting phenomenon, at one time Jewish physicians practiced in Jewish groups. And more, we're seeing mixed groups of non-Jewish and Jewish physicians practicing together, either in a single specialty or sometimes in a group practice where there are other specialties involved. And oftentimes, many of the non-Jewish physicians are already at other hospitals, and so they facilitate the Jewish physicians coming on the staffs of those hospitals because they're associates. But let's get to one other factor, which has been the relationship to the University of Pittsburgh. Over the years, there has been an ongoing concern by the medical staff at the hospital that the gradual closening of the relationship between the hospital and the university would mean that the medical staff would lose its autonomy and its control over its own practice. And that as the university became closer to Montefiore and vice versa, that the doctors would somehow lose control of their ability to practice the way in which they want to. I don't believe that that's so, because it hasn't happened up to this point. But, you know, perception is reality, and many physicians have figured that the handwriting was on the wall and they ought to find themselves appointments at other hospitals within the city. Secondly, there were a number of struggles, I guess I should call them, in the early 70s when Montefiore first became a true medical center hospital. And that related to the question of the reorganization. Most university teaching hospitals have full-time heads of the clinical department, and those heads have authority and responsibility for the care that goes on within their departments. And that means that they have the responsibility for oversight over the practicing physician. There are many physicians who resent such oversight. They feel that they're being watched. They feel that their practice is being scrutinized, because the teaching hospital system is an open system with medical students and interns and residents and full-time physicians participating in the teaching and overseeing the care. And to that extent, they represent a significant amount of additional control over the practice of medicine in the teaching hospital. Some physicians really don't mind this because they recognize that it's part of the teaching program, and in exchange for that, they get the stimulation of teaching medical students and residents and are helped to be kept abreast of the latest developments in medicine, plus the fact that they have a well-qualified house staff of interns and residents to oversee their patients on weekends and nights and when they're in their offices, and this contributes to better care. There are some physicians who don't really want to have people looking over their shoulder. And in the early 70s, there were a group of physicians who contended that the teaching program was taking away from them the authority for the treating of their patients, which in fact it was not. But be that as it may, a number of them left the hospital and moved primarily to Shadyside Hospital. Some moved to West Penn, but primarily to Shadyside. And Shadyside at one time was not a significant hospital. It had inadequate facilities. It didn't have significant programs. It started out, as you know, as a homeopathic hospital. But over the years, it improved its facilities, it changed its programs, and it began to attract Jewish physicians. Again, once a group of Jewish physicians move into a hospital, then they begin to attract their colleagues. The one other thing I should point out, which is important both for suburban hospitals and center city hospitals, has been the proliferation of high technology. At one time, all of the high technology in medicine was in the medical school hospitals. But as hospitals grew and prospered, they became very, very competitive. So whereas at one time the CAT scanners and the sophisticated equipment were generally in medical school or teaching hospitals who could afford it, this began to proliferate. And as hospitals and physicians moved to the suburbs, they wanted the same level of technology that existed in the city, so they began to acquire all the high-tech equipment. So whereas at one time many patients would go to medical school hospitals because that's the only place where you could get open-heart surgery or transplants, that no longer is so. As you know, for instance, in Pittsburgh and certainly across the country, there are open-heart surgery programs everywhere. Montefiore at one time was the only hospital doing bone marrow transplantation. Today, I think there are five hospitals that are now starting into that. Whereas a few years ago, Allegheny General and Presbyterian were the only two hospitals doing open heart surgery. There are open heart surgery programs all over town. So that some of the reasons that the physicians had to admit their patients, the hospitals like Montefiore and Presbyt, have disappeared.
Well, let me ask you this question. I know that this high tech has become extremely costly to the hospitals, and it is reflected in their charges and all this sort of thing. Do you think that the quality of medicine has improved because these smaller hospitals have this, or do you think that the system of referring these acutely ill people, which, you know, are not that numerous, to hospitals that, because of their teaching status, have this equipment? Do you think that it's a better move?
Well, I have to give you two responses. One is personal, and the other is what's been reported. There have been many studies that have pointed out that the proliferation of high technology into smaller hospitals has not been good for the population. The reason being that having the equipment is one thing, but then you must have the highly trained people to operate that equipment and the physicians to do that. Most hospitals, small hospitals, are in areas where the highly trained people don't want to live and don't migrate to. And so many of these facilities have shortages of personnel, can't attract the highest quality personnel. The proliferation, though, in part, and now I'm getting personal, is a reflection of something that's going on in hospital care as contrasted to medical care that I personally disagree with. Today, the promotion is that there should be competition amongst hospitals, that hospitals should be free to do whatever they want to do, and they should compete with each other, and the best hospitals should win, so to speak. And I disagree with this for many reasons. First of all, when you have a duplication, repeated duplication, unnecessary duplication of facilities, you have unnecessary costs. I mean, if you have an open heart program in 15 hospitals when all the surgery could be done in 3 or 4, you have unnecessary costs. Secondly, the volume in each of those hospitals diminishes because it's spread out, and it's been clearly shown that the best care is delivered where there's the highest volume because the professionals are so used to it that they become so expert that there's less danger. You know, if you only do a few procedures, it becomes more difficult. At one time, going back to the early 50s in Pittsburgh and across the country, the government instituted what's called Certificate of Need. And what that was, it was a planning program where hospitals had to demonstrate to the community through organized planning groups that what they were going to build and acquire in the way of equipment was necessary. And if they couldn't demonstrate this, then they weren't approved to get it. And if they weren't approved to get it, they couldn't get federal funding, they couldn't get grants. So there was basically what amounted to public utility type control, franchise control over the hospital. And that was very, very useful in making sure that not every hospital got into everything, and it limited costs, and it also made sure that the quality aspects of what they were going into was sufficient. But over the years, for a variety of reasons, that whole system of certificate of need has been gradually eliminated, so that hospitals have been free to acquire equipment, programs, et cetera, et cetera. And we're seeing a repeated duplication, unnecessary duplication of facilities and services and programs. All that's doing is adding to the cost. I've made this analogy before. It's like having the utility companies compete with each other so that you can have 3 gas lines going down Fifth Avenue, and you can pick your supplier of your natural gas. Well, you've got to know that the costs are so fixed in all of that, it has to increase the cost. But the free market system, the competitive system in hospitals, is being promoted as a way of controlling costs. And the interestingly enough, the corporations and government is beginning to recognize that it hasn't. And there's now a movement for it to go back to what's tighter control, certificate of need, and frankly, I think that that hospital care is really too vital and important to the health of the citizens to be subjected to the free enterprise, free market system, because then you have no assurances of the quality of the care. It's a long-winded answer, but fundamentally, I
that has been my feeling.
Sure.
That's what I was supposed to.
physicians have been very reluctant to see this happen. And the reason
to see controls happen?
To see the controls happen. Because medicine is in a free enterprise mode, and you don't have to get a certificate rather than licensure to practice. And the concern is that if the hospitals come under this kind of control, then ultimately the physicians will come under this kind of control, and you'll have nationalized health insurance or national health care. And of course, they view this as bad because they view socialized medicine as being bad. So I think the major concern is that that if hospitals come under that kind of control, ultimately medicine will come under that kind of control. Interestingly enough, when we talk about competition in hospitals, as you know, today, physicians are competing very actively with hospitals.
End of side one, take two. Continued on side two.